Hi, and welcome to Thriving with Sarah and Jenny. Please join us as we explore how you can enjoy a happier life and a fulfilling career, things that aren't always that easy in our modern world.
We'll be taking a look to how you can explore well-being both inside and outside the workplace, how to prevent burnout, how to achieve true happiness in work and life, and so much more. So stick around.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of Thriving with Sarah and Jenny. I am delighted to have a guest that you all know and love today. So today, I am going to be interviewing the wonderful Jenny Brockes, because Jenny has a really interesting job title. And we talk about it peripherally all the time on the podcast, but I thought today would be a great day to do a deep dive into what exactly is lifestyle medicine, Jenny. And you set me up for success and let me know. So you are a board certified lifestyle medicine physician.
I am indeed, Sarah. Yes, and that's such a mouthful. And I'm glad it's not something that I have to write on a check anytime. It's too long. But that's the full title. So most of the time I say I am a lifestyle medicine physician.
It's a big deal.
Big deal. Lifestyle medicine's been around for a while now. And yeah, it's a global phenomenon. It's not just something that's being practiced here in Australia. There are multiple lifestyle medicine cohorts around the world. It started in the US, and there's a very strong cohort in the UK. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember the exact number of countries which have their own lifestyle medicine group, but it's growing stronger all the time. And that's really exciting, especially for me, because I came across lifestyle medicine almost by accident. I'd been working as an independent workplace-based health consultant for a number of years, teaching what I thought was relevant to help people to stay well at work. And then, you know how it is, you meet people on LinkedIn or you Google something and something else pops up. This Australasian Society of Lifestyle Medicine popped up and I thought, what's that? And when I looked at it, I thought, oh my goodness, this is exactly what I have been working in for the last few years. And there's a whole tribe of people doing exactly the same
thing. Oh, wow.
I was so excited. Because you know what it's like when you're an entrepreneur and you start something off on your own? It can be quite lonely sometimes. And you feel like you're sort of shouting into the wind. Is anybody really listening? So discovering that I was far from alone, and the fact that it's a mixture of health practitioners, it's not just doctors. It's all the allied health practitioners who have an interest in this holistic approach to what medicine or healthcare is all about. And the difference between lifestyle medicine and other forms of medical practice which are in play, lifestyle medicine comes from the premise of trying to understand what will keep people well. We come from a place of prevention first, which seems so obvious, and yet it's not, because the traditional medical model teaches health practitioners to diagnose and treat the outcomes of illness and disease, which is very important.
Yes.
A bit like psychology, which has undergone a revolution over the last few years as well. Psychology originally was all about helping people with psychological issues, but also asking the question, what keeps people thriving? But that sort of got lost somewhere along the track, especially after the world wars. And it wasn't until relatively recently that psychologists like Martin Seligman started asking, maybe we should be actually bringing back in the positive aspect of psychology. What keeps people happy, flourishing, you know, in love, all those sort of things. And this is exactly the same thing that's happening now with medicine. Lifestyle medicine is all about bringing back to play the things that enable you to understand what matters to you in regards to your health and well-being, and what you are prepared to entertain, if you like, in terms of managing your own lifestyle so that you stay fit and healthy for as long as possible. And of course, if you develop a condition, then you know, you see a lifestyle medicine physician to see, well, okay, this has happened. Let's look at what you can do to mitigate that and prevent it from progressing, because a lot of things get worse over time if they're not dealt with early. And then if it really needs further management, then you go more into the traditional way of addressing a chronic medical illness.
Yeah.
The thing that is so critical here is we have health systems cratering around the planet.
Okay.
It doesn't matter where you are, the story is the same. People are struggling to access timely services for whatever ailment they are dealing with, whether it's physical, mental, or emotional. And I see the stories coming out about the NHS, which is on its knees. The US is having major, major struggles. And it's exactly the same here in Australia.
Yeah.
Health practitioners, the nurses, the doctors, the physios, everybody are just completely exhausted through having to try and deal with the growing burden of chronic illness.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, we are living longer.
Is it?
Which is good.
Yep.
But it's only good if you stay healthy. And whereas people used to get older and maybe develop a chronic condition, whether it's high blood pressure or diabetes or something like that. Today, there are many younger people who have multiple chronic health conditions. So it's not just there's an increased number of people trying to access health services. There are more people with multiple chronic health conditions, which of course takes an enormous amount of time, effort, and energy to manage effectively. And so lifestyle medicine is essentially throwing out a lifeboat.
Yeah.
Because we want to make prevention the norm. If we start by looking at what we can do at the grassroots level to say, hey, let's get good at encouraging you to come in for a checkup in order to stay well for the future, how good is that? Because you may then never develop those chronic medical conditions. And that means we're freeing up the space for those people who need to access the health advice they need.
Yeah.
And everybody else stays well in the interim. I mean, it's a win-win-win for everybody.
I was going to say, it seems so obvious first.
It does seem obvious, but it's not the thing obvious.
It's not the norm, is it? It's very not. Much... Let's close the gates after the horse has bolted, kind of thing. Close the barn door after the horse has bolted. Yep. It's interesting when you said that, I was reminded of an old friend of mine works as a nurse in palliative care. And she said there were so many things that she saw in end-of-life care that, I don't want to say like contributed, I'm sure like they may have done, but I don't know that, but contributed, but affected people's end of life experiences that were things that if they had been treated appropriately or potentially not happened at all earlier in life. And she was a real advocate for doing things, treating, helping, fixing, correcting much earlier in life. You know, so doctors getting involved in a really regular care, preventive, all the things you're talking about much earlier.
Yep.
Because she said that she wouldn't have this kind of snowball effect at the end.
She's right.
And I think that's really what you're saying, isn't it? And yeah. She saw it right up to that point.
She's right. And here's the thing, 80% of all chronic medical diseases are essentially preventable. Low figure.
So like which ones? I think I know, but tell our listeners, what are like the top ones that are preventable?
All right. Heart disease is probably the biggest one. Obesity, type 2 diabetes, many cancers could be prevented through lifestyle intervention. And I don't think many people realize that.
Wow.
For example, alcohol consumption is a big issue. There, we have many communities where overindulgence in alcohol causes major social problems.
Yeah.
But it's more than the social issues. It causes immense damage to an internal the internals of a person, and is responsible for triggering multiple different forms of cancer. So if we...
Wow.
So it boils down to education, awareness, and motivating. And the most important thing is motivating people to want to take charge of their own health and well-being. Because the thing is, I mean, you know, when you're young, you're invincible. You never imagine yourself as getting a bit old and crumbly and developing things like high blood pressure or gout or arthritis or any of those things.
Yep.
And so we sort of think that, you know, it doesn't relate to us, but we do know that lifestyle medicine is something that we have to practice across the whole lifespan.
Yeah.
If we can encourage parents to get their children involved from an early age with healthier eating choices, this makes such a big difference. We, again, you know, eating is something that we take for granted because we do it every single day, usually.
Yep.
And what's critical is understanding we have so much scientific evidence to show that healthy eating keeps us well.
Yeah.
So this isn't rocket science, but it's...
No, none of the things you're saying are rocket science, right? Maybe we should change our podcast name to It's Not Rocket Science.
Exactly. Thriving is not rocket science.
Not rocket science.
It's the healthy eating, the physical activity that we choose to do or not do. And it doesn't mean you have to go to the gym if you hate the gym. It's the sleep component. It's the stress management component. It's the social component.
Yeah.
All the components that we talk about in our podcast.
Yeah.
That help us to thrive at work are what we need to stay healthy. So it's just about understanding that we're not just doing this just to be happier at work and thrive at work. We're doing this because we stay fit and healthy and well in life as well as work.
Our whole lives. Absolutely. And it's, you know, the reason I think for me that it's that workplace is where I focus my energies is that's where people spend most of their time.
Yes.
And so that's where we can... make the biggest impact.
Yes.
But in all of the areas you've just described, I'm really interested in this, what you said as well, that it's not just physicians who are part of lifestyle medicine, that it's practitioners of all types, shapes, sizes, all areas. So would it be right to say there's a movement within the healthcare professional community to say, stop, enough is enough. We can't just, you know, catch the floods as they pour out. We need to fix things upstream.
It's a global movement, and it's really just switching towards a holistic, individual, human-centered approach to healthcare. That's what we're looking at. And then the thing is, I believe that our patients want it. Because who doesn't want to be cared for as a person, as an individual with our own needs and agendas and all the rest of it? And health practitioners want it because there's no joy. I mean, most people who end up in the healthcare professions are drawn to it because they care deeply about people. They want to be of service. They want to make a positive difference. And unfortunately, the system at the moment is grinding them down.
Yeah.
And they're losing their passion. They're losing their motivation. They're burning out in droves. They're leaving the profession in droves, which is just a travesty, because we can fix this. And I think the good thing is that because lifestyle medicine is starting to become better known and recognized, that's adding to the demand on both sides.
Yep.
More and more people are saying, where can I find a lifestyle medicine physician?
Yeah.
And we are embracing more and more different health practitioners into the movements around the world. So we have, you know, doctors, we have nurses, we have physiotherapists, we have chiropractors, we have nutritionists, we have dietitians, exercise physiologists, quite a few naturopaths, you name it, they're there.
Because we're here.
We all come from the same place.
Yeah.
Of wanting to make a positive difference to people's health and well-being.
And I think that's so beautiful. I mean, I love it and I obviously ascribe to it. And now you've made me, so you've said that, I'm like, I'm going out for a run when we finish today. but it's so interesting that just the phrase you just used there, we want to make a positive difference, right? I can only imagine what it is like for healthcare professionals on the front line right now, especially after the pandemic. And when everything you see is fixing harm.
Yeah, it's harm and outcomes.
Harm and outcomes. You are very rarely in a position of positive movement, positive care, I would say. And that doesn't mean the care they give isn't positive. That's not what I'm saying. But it's that feeling that we always talk about of making progress, positive progress, right? And so I can only imagine how deeply that must impact those people and why the burnout is in droves. And so not only is this great for individuals, Jenny, what I'm hearing is this is the potential to save the healthcare profession as well.
Totally.
Because who's going to want to get into that given the state it's currently in the world? But this is a way to get people into it and to help them make that positive difference in the world that I'm sure that's what they signed up for in the
Absolutely.
First place.
And I'm not saying that there aren't health practitioners out there doing amazing work, because there are.
Oh, no, absolutely.
There are beautiful people doing amazing things in all sorts of.
They're doing the hardest work, right?
And they're doing the hardest work. Yeah. But staying upbeat and staying motivated to keep on keeping on is tricky.
Yeah.
When every day you're dealing with worried people, and then you get all the negative behaviors associated with that, and then you're being blamed for being made to wait,
yep.
or not getting access to the treatment you know you need, and we know you need too.
Yep.
It's horrible because, you know, sometimes decisions are being made about individuals' health,
yeah,
that you know could be very different, but it's just not possible in the current situation to do that. And that's that is shocking. Room for improvement.
Room for improvement. And that's I was gonna say, that sounds like that's, I guess, how and why after your burnout, it makes so much sense that that's where you went and how you have found the ability to go on. So for our listeners, I'm gonna ask you for two sets of three.
Goodness.
As a lifestyle medicine physician.
Yes.
What are the three things that you would tell me or tell anyone they can do to help with this positive preventative measures that anyone can start right now?
Absolutely. The first thing is to give yourself permission to look after yourself. We have to press pause for long enough to say, yes, I need to go in for my, well, I know you have the MOT in the UK. I need to go in for my MOT. Once in a year, or often you go in and you say, hi, nothing wrong, I'm just here for a checkup, because there are so many things that we have no idea could be going on in our bodies. So, you know, a simple thing like a blood pressure check or blood sugar check or something like that could be potentially life-saving. But unless you actually physically go to ask for those checkups, I mean, we have well women checkups, which we know about. The men are a bit more reluctant to go in for their checkups. So I think the permission piece is critical and builds on the awareness of why we are so keen for people to become more proactive in staying well. Because this is a long-term investment.
Yeah.
What you do today will hopefully keep you well 10, 20, 30 years from now. So I'm all for that. The other thing to do is, especially in the workplace, because I think the reason why I sort of chose to work primarily in the workplace is because so many of my patients when I was working as a GP were burnt out, super stressed, suffering from anxiety and depression and all those other issues because of what was going on in the workplace. So I think the other thing is, if you are in a job, paid employment, a boss, a supervisor, whatever, are you making sure that you're not putting yourself at risk through your behaviors in how you go about your workday? So what do I mean by this? Well, this again goes back to the basics of making sure that you do try to get enough good quality sleep. I mean, if you've got small kids and stuff, that can be a challenge. I get that, but we can try.
Yeah.
Secondly, it's about making sure we have enough downtime, because work becomes so all-consuming. And up until fairly recently, we've sort of worshipped at the altar of work first, always work.
Yeah.
Everything else on second, which is the nonsense. And thirdly, we've just driven ourselves too hard. We're wondering why we're burning out so much. It's because we're just trying to do too much. We're human and not machines. So it's about sort of looking at how we're operating and just being real with ourselves, being honest and saying, is this too much? Am I driving myself into the ground and potentially an early grave? What could be done differently? So I think doing the check-in, particularly in the workplace.
Yeah.
And the third thing is the social piece. We know that having friends, social connections,
is
probably the most important part of well-being.
Okay.
If you've got friends that you like to hang around with, you've got a loving family, and you do things together regularly, we know that you're going to be happier. You're going to be able to cope much better with any stressors that come your way. And we're always facing different challenges and stressors. And we do live longer and we don't get as sick so often. So, I mean, there's a lot going for making sure that we've got sufficiently strong social connections, whether it's intimate relationships or friendships or colleagues at work. Just making sure we've got those connections in place.
Oh, amazing. Well, I was going to ask you to then say at work, but actually I think all three of those are absolutely, they're just the same answer, Jenny. So you get it there. You know, thank you for explaining it so clearly. I mean, it's so, like I said, it sounds like, of course, it's just one of those moments where you think there's no arguing what everything that you've said, and there's no arguing that this is the way out of, I don't even want to say forward, but it's the way out of our current predicament, right? Which is, I think, this preventative measure. So how can people, I guess, get in touch with you? Obviously, they can get in touch with us via the podcast, but how do people get your help in their workplace, which is where you do your primary work?
Yes.
And what kind of services do you offer workplaces on your consulting, and how do you help them?
Okay. So that's a very big question, Sarah.
I know.
Jenny, I'll do my best for your job. So if people want specifically to contact myself, then the easiest way is to do it through my website, which is drjennybrockes.com. And I'm more than happy to set up a call for a chat or an email or whatever communication channel you prefer, to talk about what you're interested in finding out more about. I guess I'm different from other lifestyle medicine practitioners in that I'm non-clinical. So I don't see people on an individual basis. I work primarily with groups of people. So I am engaged by different organizations and associations to help them work through a particular challenge that they're facing, or if they're looking to put together a workplace well-being program of some sort. And this might be the whole program, or it might be a component of the program.
Yeah.
Because I tend to specialize in, well, let's make sure we can prevent burnout. That's really, really, really important. The second aspect is keeping people feeling psychologically safe, because that's really important, managing stress. And the third aspect is mental well-being, which combats the risk of the mental mood disorders such as anxiety and depression, which again sort of come from exposure to chronic stress. The three are all interlinked. And as we've talked about before, so if you're dealing with burnout prevention, you're also simultaneously tackling what's going on with the psychological safety aspect in your workplace. And what's thing with mental well-being? Are people feeling supported and encouraged to speak up if they're not feeling that great, or if they're experiencing anxiety or something like that? So those are the types of things I do, usually through workshops and seminars, virtual or face-to-face, because, you know, ever since pandemic time, the world has gone more virtual, which is good and bad. And I think the good is that it means that it's possible to access people who may be working for a global company.
Yes.
They've got different branches and scattered around the world. And it also means that you can work with the leaders to ensure that they have not just the understanding of the business case for workplace well-being, because there is a significant business case, but to also understand what that means for them as individuals and as leaders in their own right. Because I think when you have the leaders on board,
mm-hmm.
because they need to stay at the top of their game, they can be much more effective in their leadership.
Yeah.
And then again, you get that ripple effect where everybody goes, oh, well, actually, they're walking their talk. They're actually doing what they say they're giving us permission to do. It's not just, oh, tick in the box, do this, do that, do the other.
Yep. Love it.
Love it. And it makes it so much sense. And I think there's something about when a doctor tells you to do something, and you kind of sit up and take notice. So for me, yeah, this is like a huge benefit that you bring, because, you know, consultants can come in and people tell you to do things. But I have to say, there is something about a physician or a doctor who, you know, comes in and you need to do this thing. And you're like,
oh, okay.
Yes, you're right. You do have a the position has a gravitas still.
It does have a gravitas.
Carried over. Yeah.
And the thing about lifestyle medicine, it is entirely evidence-based. Everything that we practice within
life. That's super important to say, isn't it? Yeah.
Always, always, always based on countless research articles and scientific research. There's no fluff. There's no hype or wishful thinking. This is based on what has been shown. This is our current level of understanding. Doesn't we always get it right? As we learn, we have to change our opinions on things.
We discover science does that, doesn't it?
Science does that. Yeah. It's a science and an art together. The science of exploration and trying to create the understanding. And then the art is in the practice and the doing and realizing that the goalposts might shift a little bit as we go along.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I love that. Thank you so much, Jenny. And I hope you all enjoyed that as much as I did. Just really, you know, deep diving into that aspect of who you are and what you do. And thank you, everybody, for joining us today on Thriving with Sarah and Jenny.
Well, thank you, Sarah, for being such a wonderful interviewer and being interested to find out a little bit more about who I am and what my background is. And hopefully it's given our listeners some food for thought about what they could be doing maybe differently for their own health and well-being.
I think so. I don't know about you listeners, but I am going out for my run now. Thanks everybody for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Bye for now.
Bye.
Thanks so much for tuning into this episode of Thriving with Sarah and Jenny. We hope you've enjoyed listening to it as much as we did recording it.
And you can always get involved in the well-being conversation at all of our social links in the show notes. Until next time, stay safe, stay happy, and thrive in whatever you do.